going to start again. There we go. None of that is going to be in my recording.
Ha ha ha! You people missed out so badly. Eat all the shit! Eat shit like the Boston Celtics! Eat shit like the fans of the Boston Celtics, because those people are cunts. Apart from the nice ones who follow me on Twitter.
The ones chanting bullshit on the first free throw of the game,
you guys are fucked. You guys are Patriots fans on a day off, and you can go fuck yourself with a brick.
LeBron, when he's locked in, is a remarkable beast, isn't he?
And you're saying this from the seven consecutive, or is it eight consecutive games over 30 and 10 or whatever it is?
He just looks like he's just like, I just couldn't be asked. I couldn't be asked waiting to beat you guys in six games. I'm just going to beat you in four. And we're probably lucky that Golden State exists on the other side of the draw. It could just be a really boring final series as well.
Golden State are going to destroy the Cavs anyway, which is kind of sad. But because it's such an amazing display of... It's was that Pantera album title? Vulgar display of power. It's just it's a vulgar display of power. He's just and the contempt with which that, I mean, Kelly Olynyk's a fucking dick, and it was so hilarious to see him just treat him like a fucking turnstile in that game. It was like everything that, I mean, I have to say I'm bringing baggage to this because I fucking hate the New England Patriots, and they are the worst fucking fan base in the entire NFL, who are full of awful fan bases. And there's a lot of Patriot bleed into the Celtics, particularly when they're doing well. There's a lot of Patriot bandwagon that jumps on the Celtics. So it's, I mean, they have fucking Tom Brady turning up to free agent meetings. Like Tom Brady's going to make any fucking material difference to the Boston Celtics basketball team.
It's a shame that the Spurs lost their sort of, like, the whole cog in the machine that makes
It's a shame is a very, very United Nations powder blue stack hat peacekeeper way of expressing what it is that Zaza Pachulia of Georgia went fucking NHL goon on Kawhi Leonard. If I wanted to see that shit, I'd watch hockey, and nobody watches hockey apart from the Canadians, and they're weird. But to be honest, that was actually, I haven't watched any Western Conference ball since. I mean, since a bit over halfway through that game, Spurs were up by 20, and you thought, holy shit, we might be into something really cool. 23, I think they were.
23 or 24.
Yeah, but they were 20 at the half.
Everyone that I've listened to this week is like, oh, the Warriors had come back. And I'm like, yeah, they were 6 minutes into the third quarter and they hadn't started that comeback.
No, they hadn't. And there was a lot of fucking historical revision. Oh, Steph was starting to shoot it. No, the Warriors were just, you know, they're not, you know, they come back, but they're also quite capable of coughing up big leads. Christmas Day, Cavs. It was on television. People might have seen it. But it was just so, and whether it was dumbass clumsiness or whether the dude actually thought, I'm going to get in this dude's space and fuck him up. Either way, it's fucked it. It is fucked as a spectacle. It is now just, and it's just as a punter, it's sad because we've been waiting months to get to here and now it's fucked.
Well, the best thing about Pop's little David Fizdale type rant was the fact that he was like, you know, it was really cool that our team had got to this spot, that we were, you know, we'd worked towards certain things and everything that we'd worked towards was starting to click.
We'd managed to outsmart the incredible machine, and then the incredible machine pulled something out that isn't in the rules and they broke one of our best bits.
Because I've had that feeling as a coach where you have plans and you go up against a team that you're never, ever, ever supposed to win against, and you beat them with your plans, and it's just no better feeling. It's just, it just feels fucking awesome.
And as a non fucking grunt level fan, a non hot take fan, you go in there trying to find out, you know, hoping there's going to be something you're not going to expect, hoping. I hope I see something that I hadn't predicted, and I hope it's because somebody does something really cool or clever or thinks their way around the problem so that the smarter team wins, not just the team with the overwhelming talent advantage.
Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see this Warriors team. What happens? Like, say they win this year.
Well, say they win this year.
Well, you know, Well, Curry or Durant could go down. One of those guys goes down, and it's back to even.
I think you need both of them to go down, to be honest.
Maybe. Look,
we pull up tape from exactly this point last year. I was saying the same stuff, but
The Cavs have got a lot of weapons. They're not the best offensive team, but they definitely can put points on you. You know,
they only have to play four games of defense a year, though.
Yeah, that's right. Like, and they pull out a couple of cold shooting Golden State games, and you just never know.
Yeah, but a cold shooting Golden State game means that, oh, well, we'll stop giving the ball to Clay and Steph. We'll just give it to KD, and he'll just fucking ISO his way to 40 points. That advantage doesn't exist anymore in the same way it did last year.
I wonder how long Clay's going to be there. I really do. Because he's not... Like, he saved their ass last final series. Like, they wouldn't have got to the finals.
He'll probably get an opportunity to save their ass again.
Yeah, maybe. It just seems like now they default to Durant for that. You know, they never seem to try and push Clay into, you know, going supernova anymore.
Yeah, but, I mean, the reality is that at some point that team, someone's leaving. Just because the cap.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm trying to work out. Like, I think Iguodala's sort of the first, and I think...
I think it's just whoever comes up for contract first, to be honest.
Because I said, who is the Iguodala-type player that Washington could get so that when they go to bench units, they don't suck, absolutely completely?
And the answer is Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, Stashelder said, well, Andre Iguodala's probably going to get paid by someone to do that.
I think he'd enjoy Chocolate City. He's entirely the right sort of dude for that. He played for quite a few years in Philly, just up the road.
Because that's what they need is, you know, they have a good starting unit, but they need someone so that when the coach puts the bench guys in, you just don't see a lead disappear onto the floor.
Every game the Wizards lost, they lost because their bench got absolutely fucked. And every game they won in spite of the fact that their bench got absolutely fucked.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, John Wall's final quarter of playoff basketball was almost as horrific as James Harden's final five quarters of playoff basketball.
Yeah. Oh, look, I think when you... I think both those teams, like Brooks and D'Antoni, it's their first season there. They're still... Yeah,
but they've overachieved.
Yeah, they've overachieved. They're still working shit out. And I reckon being stress tested like that is the best thing for you, because then you can go away and go, okay, well, we can't rely on this when it comes to the big games. We've got to fix these parts.
Yeah, we need more options. But the thing is that was the story of Brooks's Oklahoma City teams as well.
Hmm.
Two and a half stars who were gunning like hell and not enough bits to back it up.
Yeah, you wonder whether he and Washington's front office have learnt by that. So,
is only Grunfeld still in Washington, or has he been given the axe?
No, he's still there.
He's still there. I think he was the one who went instead of old mate, whose name escapes me. It was only a year ago he was the coach, and his name escapes me.
Yeah, I don't think that he'll be
guy.
Back.
That guy who was the coach of the Wizards, who's eminently forgettable and not very good at his job. I keep wanting to say Kevin McHale, and he's not him at all. He was the coach of a different red and white team.
He's interviewing for the Orlando president's job, so.
Oh, the GM?
No, I think they're getting two people. They're getting like a...
President and a...
A president and a GM. So I think that the GM will probably be like a... You know, like an ex-Spurs or ex-Atlanta assistant GM or something like that.
Proper cap functionary, numbers, spreadsheets, can figure out the numbers, and someone else can run the program effectively.
Yep. Pretty much. So,
actually, speaking of Wall and Harden and so forth, I mean, star blowout, star failure or injury has kind of been a theme of these playoffs.
Yep.
Apart and as well as the playoffs actually sucking. Dudes being found out on the big stage, or dudes getting their ankles found out on the big stage, seems to have been a recurring, causative factor in why it's been a little bit toilet.
Yeah, I think the only really compelling series has been Spurs Rockets, and even it sucked in the last game. So,
well, even the series that were close, the games themselves were usually fairly lopsided.
Yeah, that's true. Though there was two good Spurs games, wasn't there? There was the overtime one, and one other I think was reasonably close. And a couple of the Grizzly Spurs games were good to watch, I have to say.
Well, I'm thinking back to the Bulls Celtic series. Because it was so fucking insane. It was unwatchable, but it was insane. Because you didn't believe either team were going to win. And it was kind of, prove to me that you guys can score enough points to win a game. This could be entertaining.
But the league is really top heavy, though. Really top heavy.
It is. But, I mean, as we've said, you've been campaigning on Twitter about this. About the league should have smoothed the cap instead of having these big, you know, big lumping fucking increases in the salary cap, which has led to situations whereby the Dubs can hoard stars like the guys they've got for the sake of 2 years. But it's only for 2 years, and then it'll be something else. And then we'll be in a situation where Boston have all the talent, and that's going to be really bad.
Well, not only Boston, but Philly, because I didn't realise this. Because the picks worked out the way they did, right? So the Lakers get their pick and everyone's going, oh, hooray,
the
Lakers
get their pick. The draft happened, folks, if you missed that. The Lakers kept their pick, which meant if they'd lost their pick, that was complicated and we won't go into it because it's boring. But basically the pick order was such that if the Lakers had dropped out of the top four, they would have lost this year's pick to the 76ers and 2019's first round pick to somebody else. But that didn't happen, so that saved the day.
But, not really, because how...
Well, the Lakers, it saved the day.
How good do you think the Lakers are going to be next year? Do you think they'll make the West Finals?
I reckon 10th.
Yeah, if you're lucky. Like, a couple of bad injuries and they could easily be down the bottom again. Now, I didn't
know this.
But
they had a couple of bad injuries this year. So
yeah, that's what I mean. Like, all it'll take is that they could easily be at the pointy end of the lottery again. And next year, they have to give Philly their unprotected pick, no matter what happens. If it's number one, Philly get it. So all they've done is sort of stave off, you know, it happening for one more year.
Yeah, I think they're going to be considerably better.
But, you know, Philly's got... Like, Philly and Boston are just going to get all of... Oh, yeah, the Suns. But, okay, so I've got a little rant on this one, right? Because there was a couple of conspiracy theorists in my Suns feed going, oh, the draft's rigged, we got number four. It's like, okay, let's go through the number four picks through the ages. Would you like Chris Paul? Would you like Lamar Odom? Would you... Like, there's fucking so many good picks at number four.
And more to the point, how do you rig a lottery... with 1,000 combinations with members of the every fucking team in the room watching.
It's amazing how many people think that lottery is rigged. Like, well, they still have this mentality
about David Stern and frozen envelopes.
Yeah, but not as a joke. They firmly believe that the lottery is rigged. And I think the best take was from your mate Amin El Hassan, who said, you know, PricewaterhouseCoopers or whichever accounting firm runs the draft.
It's the one that didn't fuck up the Oscars, so whichever one that one is.
This is like a drop in the ocean in their business. But if they got caught rigging this for the Lakers, and why would you rig it for the Lakers when every other team doesn't want you to do that, then it would destroy their multi-billion dollar reputation. Yeah. And they're not going to risk that. It's just insane how many people believe that it's rigged.
Well, it's because of mentality. I mean, fuckheads like Dave Anthony constantly say, oh, the NBA's rigged, the NBA's rigged. Fucking show you working. Demonstrate. I mean, there was some dodgy shit that went on in David Stern's era. There were some unilateral calls made. Yeah. These days, it's a lot fucking harder to do that shit.
Well,
it might just be that the teams with the highest statistical possibility of getting the top seeds happen to get the top seeds. That's kind of maths. That shit happens.
Was Philly like, there wasn't very much movement in the draft this year. There was no big jumps. I think the Suns dropped two spots.
Well, wasn't the pick that that ended up with Philly at three was the one they swapped with.
Yeah, so that.
So that was actually Kings, Sacramento's pick, but I think Kings it might have been the one that they
the
were
Kings
given.
Got the third pick, and they were supposed to get the fourth
pick. That was the New Orleans pick, wasn't it?
No, that was number 10.
Was that theirs
10.
Or were the New Orleans
pick? No, New Orleans is 10. So they got, like, you know.
They ended up, they actually, I mean, if you disregard the fact good. That they lost their pick because of stupid front office stuff, they still have, they're still picking twice in the top 10.
Yeah.
Which, if you had a team that was knew their shit from clay, that wouldn't be a bad thing.
Well, that was the really interesting thing. Bleacher Report had a through the ages, you know, the best pick at every position. And you can go down to pretty low, and there's two or three guys in the last 20 years that...
Yeah, but that's confirmation bias. You know, that means there's 19 out of those 20 years where it was a piece of shit.
Yeah, so, yeah. But, I mean... But again, that's where you've got to have that front office maven that can absolutely nail that pick. You'd be a lot more comfortable at 10 if you were the Spurs than if you were the Kings, that's for sure.
Well, based on your track record, certainly. So, I mean, the winners of the draft were definitely... I mean, the Kings were kind of one, even though it's a bit depressing to know that... In theory, you had the three, and you don't have the three anymore.
Yeah.
The Celtics obviously won. Big Baller Brand won because they're going to be in either a major East Coast market or more likely in L.A. And it sounds like that Lonzo is only going to work out for L.A. I'd so want him to go to the Celtics, though, just because I want to see LaVar Ball's approach to race relations butt up against Boston's approach to race relations. A bit of fucking truth being told to.
Yeah, I think there's zero chance of him going to Boston.
I think they want Fultz.
That pick either goes out the door for a gun or a couple of guns, or they take Fultz and they do a little mini rebuild. Which is
the word seems to be
the smart way to go.
That Fultz and Thomas, it's more likely to be Fultz or Thomas rather than Fultz and Thomas in terms of how they work together. But then again, Brad Stevens gets paid a lot of money to figure out coaching shit. I'm sure he can find a way to play Fultz and Thomas.
Well, you get a year. Like, Thomas is not a free agent till the end of next year. You got a whole year to figure it out, see whether it works. If it doesn't work, you don't pay Thomas.
For sure. And the other winner, of course, is everybody who hates New York. Because they didn't. They amounted to fuck all. And there was a... Worldwide Wobbs live basketball show. Buckets, he's a Knicks fan, and his live reaction to their pick was just as I tweeted out that you must be watching on a loop because it was just so so beautiful.
Well, the only thing is though that if they had got a higher pick, they would have screwed it up. So.
Of course they would. Although they picked Porzingis at six, and that was by no means a sure thing. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, there's probably half the league that wouldn't have picked Porzingis at six. So.
Four. They picked him at four.
Oh, fourth. Well, fourth. Fuck. You know, that's even better.
Fourth is better than sixth.
This just doesn't. The losers, the Suns, obviously. Everyone who hates Boston, obviously. And New Orleans, sure, Boogie's worth the pick they're not going to get in a pretty deep draft. Given that they're now stuck with two big, tall, fat dudes and not a lot of small shooting dudes. And this is a draft that's pretty solid with small shooting dudes.
Yep. Well, like that guy that smashed... Lonzo in the semifinals of the college championship, you know, like he could go as low as 8 or 9. It's a pretty good draft if you want a guard.
Yeah, for sure. And being strong in the big fat bloke positions is kind of pointless in a league that doesn't value that.
No one wants centers anymore.
Having said that, Anthony Davis is thought well enough of by the NBA journalism thing because to get voted NBA All First Team.
The only non-finals player to make the three All NBA sides.
And the All NBA First Team had zero members of the Golden State Warriors in it, which was fairly disgusting. The first team was Harden and Westbrook as the guards, Davis is at the five, and LeBron and Kawhi. Got that right?
Instead of the instead of the conference finals, maybe we should just play, you know, a couple of 10-minute games of the first team All NBA versus the Golden State Warriors and see who wins. That we're might be more fun.
That first team would be a fun team to see on the floor. Obviously, Kawhi might need a Zimmer frame.
Yeah.
Bigger news out of that, probably equally bigger news out of the NBA teams, is that Paul George and Gordon Hayward missed out on selection for any of the first, second, or third teams, which has a big impact on their team's likelihood of trading them, because as a result of that, they're not eligible for the super duper ultra mega fucking Barbara Streisand max, the extra year in the extra 70 million bucks. So as a result, their current host team isn't at a competitive advantage in any contract off with a competitor. So it's more likely that those teams will seek to trade them in the near future, because it's more likely that those dudes will leave because their host teams don't have that competitive advantage that they can offer anymore.
Paul George,
much more likely to be a Laker today than he was yesterday.
Well, okay, so the George one's interesting because the Lakers have a pick that they could go to Indiana and say, you're not going to keep him, we'll give you the number two pick for him right now. And they would be confident that they could re-sign him. So,
but it wouldn't take the number two pick to get Paul George. If you're the Lakers, I think it would take the number 22 pick to get Paul George if you're the Lakers, because he wants to go there.
But did you see today that Atlanta offered four picks at the trade deadline for him?
Yeah. He doesn't have a trade, so it's not up to him, is it?
That's right. Like, if you're a strong organization like the Celtics
he's not going to stay in Atlanta. So they're just backing themselves to the level of delusion. Keep in mind, Atlanta have a very disrupted management circumstance in the front office. They don't even have a fucking GM at the moment.
It all depends on how much does he want to go home versus how much does he want to win. Because if you're Boston, you can say, come here and you will be in up high for the next couple of years. Yep. We've got a pretty solid team. Yep. If he goes to the Lakers...
You might get called the N-word a bit, but, you know...
Yeah, but you go to the Lakers, I can't see them making the West Finals for quite a while. Hey?
Yeah, they're not. They're not going to... Well, let's have a look. Take the temperature in the West. Who's fading? The Dubs will be around until even if you peel out one or two of their All Stars, they're still going to be a competitive side.
The Spurs are,
as long as they've got Kawhi, they can find parts to put around him. Mm. The Rockets are going to be better next year because they're going to figure out how to play defense. The Clippers might implode, might reload, but they have so much resource.
Yeah.
That Steve Ballmer was just going to underwrite it. He's just going to pay for the problem to go away. It's like Roman Abramovich with Chelsea. I don't think they will ever suck again. I think they will always be... They'll only be down for a year. And then there'll be a new broom, a new coach, a new fucking enterprise, and they'll just start again.
Well, they're a little bit like the Sydney Swans, right? Where the Sydney Swans have this attitude of...
Now, the Sydney Swans have a logo that doesn't suck.
the Swans have this attitude of, we can never suck in our market because there's so many, you know, like we're a niche team. We can't afford to be bad for lots and lots of years, or we'll just get forgotten. And that's what the Clippers are. The Clippers can't be Philly and suck for 6 years.
No, you're exactly right, because they can't afford when you're the number two, and you're very much the number two in your market. You can't. That old Avis tagline from the 70s. Because most companies would say, we're number one, and Ava said, we're number two. What that means is that we try harder because we're trying to knock off the number one. Yep. And that's exactly where the Clippers have to be, because they're a distant two in that market. And the market's just getting more difficult with two NFL teams moving in, and there's two baseball teams in town, and there's two NHL teams around, and there's multiple soccer teams, and it's LA, the sun's out, the beaches are just down the fucking road.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other things to do that don't involve turning up to watch bad basketball.
So the Oklahoma City are always going to be in the bottom half of the eight, but I think they'll be good enough to be in the bottom half of the eight.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if they ever lost Russ, and I think you would only... I think if they lost Russ, it would be to a career-ending injury, it wouldn't be to him fucking off somewhere else because he's kind of backed himself into that corner.
Yeah.
So hey, yeah, I think you're right. They're always going to be good enough for at least a 6-8.
Yeah, and the same with the Grizz. As long as the Grizz have Conley and Gasol, they're going to be good for 6-8.
Yeah, Grizz. It really depends. I mean, when they don't have a path to get anybody else after that. But I think you're right. They're always going to occupy space in the. They're always going to be in a way seed in the first round.
Their problem is they rolled the dice on Chandler Parsons and came up snake eyes, unfortunately. But the Pelicans want to get into the eight. The Kings want to get into the eight. Look, there's a lot of teams that want to get into that. Okay, take your team, Portland. I think Portland are going to be better next year if they can have a full season of their coaching staff with Nurkic.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to make a lot of difference for exactly the reason you're pointing out, is that there's so many very solid teams at the back end of that eight. And Portland, unless they do something incredibly clever, I want to say in the transfer market, you know what I mean, in the free agency and drafting, they're not going to find that transformative difference that's going to make them... they've been a 7-8 seed the last couple of years. The year before, was it 13-14? The year of that the second round run and Dame's three against the Rockets, they were effectively a fifth seed, but because of the divisional thing, they ended up with a fourth seed placing. But they were a better side compared to the rest of the West. I don't know how they get back to there.
Well, okay, but they're definitely going to be a final side for the next couple of years. I just don't think Paul George and a bunch of young guys is going to catapult you into the Western Conference.
No, but Paul George makes you more likely to be able to pull other free agents in.
Yeah, I know that.
There's a lot of very, very. I mean, how much are their cap? I mean, they're using a lot of cap on a lot of rubbish, a lot of fucking, fucking Mozgov style rubbish.
Yeah, I know people say that, but I reckon that there's going to be a lot of players going to wait a couple of years to see whether the Lakers have actually sorted their shit out before they go there.
I don't think so. I think there's so many. They're going to have
their money's not any better than any other money.
Yeah, it is because it means you can live in LA, and that actually that doesn't matter to a lot of dudes, but it matters to enough dudes.
Yeah,
that there's more that the. Your split of the population is such that every NBA player wants to be in LA. So even if you're just dealing with a subset of a subset, that subset's actually larger than OKC will ever get to see or Indiana will ever get to see. So,
yeah.
What are we talking about? We're talking about Paul George, who wants to give up a perennial fucking final side in Indiana in order to play for the worst team in the Western Conference because it's the Lakers. So there's obviously at least one dude who wants to do that, and he's a fucking perennial all-star.
He's the basketball version of a Victorian kid playing in Brisbane, though. He's an LA born and bred guy that wants to move back to his family.
That's a really good point. He's one of those dickheads.
Yeah, that's right. That's where that comes from. Whereas the Hayward thing is basically all predicated on the fact that he has a really good relationship with Brad Stevens. And...
I thought it was more predicated on the fact that he's very white and they like a white guy in Boston for reasons that are completely irrelevant to this discussion, but they tend to like a white guy in that part of the world. And they have money.
Yeah, and look, they definitely need another piece if they're going to try and actually compete with the Cavs. I just don't... If I was Hayward and I had that set up around me, I would be not going anywhere.
Yeah. I'd go to Boston. If I was Hayward, I'd go to Boston. I mean, no question. Why not? It's nice to be in an up-and-coming team, but would you like to go to the East and win now?
Well, why not? But Boston are making the Eastern Conference Finals and getting the one seed without him. That's the thing. Like he could probably walk in there and you might lose in the Eastern Conference Finals for the next 3 or 4 years while LeBron's still LeBron, but you're going to be in the finals every year.
I think when LeBron tails off, it'll be brutal and sudden. And it'll probably happen the way it happened with Kobe, which was what it was. Bloody debilitating injury, and then come back at a very limited in a limited way.
Well,
but I think LeBron's competitive instinct is such that if he comes back and he's limited, he'll just go, "Fuck it, I'm done."
I think he's a little bit more self-aware. I think if he did something like that and he was training and he couldn't do what he should be doing in training, that he would just give it away. But I've actually got...
Yeah,
I've
but I'm thinking it'd be like a catastrophic failure injury, like an Achilles or an MCL or an ACL. That would just be like, bang. It's not like a, I'm carrying a calf that's a bit dodgy or something. Or my ankle's a bit bunk, Kawhi style. It'd have to be like a catastrophic fail. And then
A little theory about him, though, because I reckon when his son gets closer to the draft, because his son's, 14 now?
He's at least 13, so early teens, yeah.
That, when he gets to the draft, he'll make sure that he's on a one-year deal with the Cavs, and whenever his kid gets drafted, he'll go, oh, okay, well, I'll come and be your Andre Iguodala.
What do you mean you'll come and go there? That won't happen. He'd be the fucking GM of the team. He'll be like, we're picking that dude in the second round. Unless you need to pick him in the first round.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if he's a lower round draft pick, they'll do whatever they have to do to get him.
I reckon LeBron's the sort of dude who'd want his young bloke to go and prove his worth without nepotism. And it seems to be his kind of,
Yeah.
The measure of the dude.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the stupid Miami TV and press conference thing aside, off
yeah, he was young. I mean, he was young and stupid and badly advised. I mean,
but off the court, he is probably the best NBA player we've ever had in terms of his community development stuff and
amazing. He's up there with Magic Johnson.
He's never really had a scandal. He's never really had a whiff of a scandal.
Yeah. I mean, Magic's scandal was that he shagged women who weren't his wife and got the AIDS, or the HIV at least. But he was able to. And part of it was out of his control because of the incredible transformation of HIV drugs during the time while he had the disease. I mean, if he'd got that disease 2 years earlier, he'd be dead. But the drugs transformed in the early 90s, the retroviral inhibitors, to the point where he lives, I won't say unimpeded because I don't know what his daily life is like, but it certainly doesn't seem to. It's the fact that he's HIV never. When was the last time anybody mentioned that in terms of his ability to be the GM of the fucking the president of basketball operations of the Lakers? No one said, he has a debilitating chronic
fairly large part owner of the Dodgers too, isn't he?
Yeah, he was part of that. I don't know whether he's had to step back from that.
No, I don't know whether he's made so much
fucking money.
Yeah. I don't know whether he stepped back from it, but he's definitely still in that ownership group.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, because he's got lots of money.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, I wanted to talk about the industrial relations stuff with the cricket.
Yes, it's good. It's good to talk fucking industrial relations on this podcast. So what's happened is that we talked previously about the fact that Cricket Australia and the Australian Cricketers Association, the players union. Thrashing out the details of a new pay deal. And it's all gone horribly wrong because the previous deal had revenue sharing, limited revenue sharing, such that 20% of the income of the game was to go to players' pay. And Cricket Australia want to take that off the table. And the Cricketers Association are like, the fuck you will. That's ridiculous. It's a ridiculously small number compared to any other professional sport. But we're certainly not letting you take that off the table. To which point, Cricket Australia have warmed up all their friends in the media to go after the smug liberal elites of the Australian Cricketers Association in exactly the kind of pissant, short-sighted, fuck-witted way that you'd expect a failing corporation to do. Pretty much the way they've always done. Think back to... the Wharfies dispute in John Howard's early years. It's the same kind of shit, different day, same newspapers.
Well, there's sort of three things I find really interesting about this. One is the fact that, it's being at least outside of people like you and me who, you know, can find their way to Crick Info or, you know, Jeff Lemon or Adam Collins' piece.
With both hands.
Yeah, yeah. Like, because I mentioned it to Ryan last night, and he went, "Oh, well, if Warner and Smith don't want to play for Australia, they'll fucking get some Shield players." And I'm like, "No, I don't think you understand, mate. All the Australian cricketers will not play for Cricket Australia. They are all together. They are all saying, no, get fucked. It's not just
what do you think pays the Shield cricketers?
It's not just the top tier guys.
Yeah. What do you think pays the Shield cricketers? The same fucking 20%. And Ryan, then I know you're listening. It's the same 20%, mate.
Well, I don't think he really understood. And this is the other thing, is I don't think it's beholden on, you know, you Courier Mail journalist to explain the actual mechanics of the deal. And
isn't Crash
none of those sort
of the Courier Mail anymore?
None of those puff pieces mention the fact that what they're trying to do is slam this through before the Big Bash rights come up, because those Big Bash rights are incredibly valuable next time round because it's cheap, really popular programming. So not having to give up 20% of that extra revenue would probably be really nice for Cricket Australia. But what I don't understand from Cricket Australia, right, is do they not... like, once upon a time, cricket players were fairly insular, sort of, you know, they might have toured England, but, you know, they weren't exactly tourists of the world. And the sporting world was a lot bigger. Like, you know, we didn't know too much about the NBA and or baseball or football or soccer or whatever. But now, do they not realise that those players and that player association would know that the NBA has a 49% revenue sharing deal and then just manage to work it out that you know, let's not go on strike, let's force it through because it's actually better to be getting the product out there and making the product better? Like,
they've made a calculated decision on this to say, well, we think we can win the public in the court of public opinion. Let's put it that way. And they figure they can just bully the players into accepting what they're going to get.
Which is great that the players are going, well, hey, in 12 months' time, when you guys have to fucking fold because you've got no product and we come back and start playing again, everything will be forgotten in the court of public opinion, but we're not going to fold. We're quite happy to be unpopular for a couple of months. Because
if we don't, we are going to be fucked. And it's our livelihood.
But this is the other thing I don't understand, right? Isn't it better for Cricket Australia to have the players trying to grow the Australian game rather than just become mercenaries like the West Indian cricketers are and just take the money wherever they can?
This is exactly the sort of thing that got the West Indian board into the situation where they are. If you could Google West Indian cricket pay dispute strike, and there'll be multiple fucking responses that pop up over the last 10 to 15 years. It's exactly this kind of bullshit that turned a dominant superpower of world cricket into a bunch of irrelevant fucking fringe dwellers.
Mm.
And the reason it did was because all the talent just went, fuck this, I'm going off to earn my money in other sports. I'll go and earn it in soccer, I'll go and earn it in baseball, I'll go and earn it somewhere else. Cricket Australia needs to remember there are other sports these guys can do.
And then the final thing that no one really is bringing up, and I've had a few chats about this with people, is the fact that Cricket Australia are trying to go down the NFL model where they control every part of the sport.
Yeah, they want to be a broadcaster, don't they? They want to be a media giant. They want to control... I mean, they've already said the situation where all of the radio streaming is on their website. If you want to listen, you want to listen to the radio online of one of their games, you've got to go to their website. Now, they can't control the fact that the Australian internet is fucked, so no one's going to do that if the option is just to turn on the ABC radio.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they might
which
be
is
building
hilarious
a media-
because they're getting Murdoch's people to as their attack dogs against the ACA. Murdoch was the one who fucked the NBN.
Yeah, like they're building out an apparatus that won't be usable for maybe another decade. But like even the fact like they control all the video. So I find it endlessly frustrating with cricket in Australia that, you know, unlike the NBA where something happens and instantly I fucking know about it through video. You know, like, it's just there. Someone dunks on someone, it's on Twitter or Facebook within seconds. But you can... I remember watching the Sri Lankan series and, you know, hearing about these... seeing these amazing wickets described on Twitter, but not being able to see them until the next day when Cricket Australia will put it up on their website, and you couldn't even go to Crick Info and watch it because Crick Info aren't allowed to put any video up on their website. I just think it's incredibly short-sighted. Like, the NFL sort of can do it because they have such dominant mind space in the American sporting landscape. Cricket doesn't have that dominant mind space in Australia. Like,
it just thinks it does. It just doesn't... And it looks at the ridiculous ratings it gets over summer and thinks, wow, we're king shit. But it's over summer. If cricket happened at the same time as football, cricket would be at the position that A-League soccer is.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And the last thing is that their chairman is a union-hating ex-BHP chairman who just... It has a feel of his ideological plaything. Yeah. You know, I want to crush these guys because I don't believe in unions, and I believe you fucking little boys should do what you're fucking told.
Yeah, but they are producing all of the content, all of the content. Cricket Australia does nothing other than organises a few games.
Yeah, and the thing I find funny is he's trying to do that against people that you know, have to be fairly aggressive and firm-minded for their jobs.
Well, they're doing it against the most competitive assholes that Australia can produce. Literally. That's literally right. Dudes who will sledge people about their dead sisters.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, whoever it was who sledged Chris Cairns about the fact that his sister had died at a level crossing accident, that was an Australian. So we're talking about people who aren't that big on taking a backward step.
Yeah, it's the fact that they just thought these guys would roll over, and that real sneaky thought, I don't know if you saw this bit, but they offered Warner, Smith and Lanning these massive contracts on the provision that they didn't play IPL and they didn't go and play women's AFL or something like that. And the whole idea is, you know, it's old school fucking 1960s thinking, you know, break it from the top, get the top guys, separate them out, and then the rest will just have to fold and screw you guys down the bottom.
The ACA should bring in Bob Hawke, old school, because this is what Bob Hawke made his name in back in the day when he was the secretary of the ACTU, long before he was Labor MP. But he was the dude whenever union was in strife, they'd bring in Bob Hawke and he'd just fucking, you know, there'd be a set to and he'd suss it. So they need a Bob Hawke style headbreaker to go and fuck this stuff off, because this is a nonsense. And the point is that why do you need all this fucking money? What are you doing with this 80% plus?
Well, that's the
what
thing.
What are you doing with it?
How can you not, like?
Pay your fucking talent.
Zach Lowe makes this point all the time when people complain to him about the NBA guys getting too much money. He's like, okay, who do you want to pay? Do you want to pay the really, really rich guys that own, you know, that own the teams that are already really, really rich, or do you want to pay the people that are actually making the product that you enjoy watching?
Exactly. And the reason they're getting these ridiculous sums of money is because the game is earning ridiculous sums of money.
Yeah.
It's proportional to the amount of fucking money the sport is making.
If you can't run the game on 80% of the revenue, then maybe you should find another fucking job.
Yes.
Because that's because they're trotting out, oh, the grassroots needs more money. Hey, 80% of the fucking revenue, you should be able to run the whole, touch football runs on, at the grassroots level, runs on no fucking money at all. You know, we beg for fields, we fucking, you know, pay for all our training gear ourselves. Like, no one funds us for that. You know, cricket should be able to fucking survive on 80% of the revenue.
No doubt. No doubt. The NBA can somehow manage on 50.
Yeah. In a
fairly
competitive
market. The NFL can
somehow
manage on 50 odd. 55, yep. I think, something like that.
Mm. So,
in conclusion, go fuck yourself, James rant. Sutherland, with a sawn off brick. Sports that are stupid, the Australian Football League had an idea that wasn't very popular. Should we talk about the idea the AFL had that isn't very popular?
Which one's this? Is this the
apart from playing AFL football in the first place? But they floated the idea of what they were calling wild card, having like a wild card final, such that they have this problem that they're psychologically wedded to having a 22 round home and away season. The problem is they have 18 teams, and 22 rounds means there's a lopsided fixture list, and some teams get an advantage and some teams don't. And they've gone way down the rabbit hole in trying to solve this. And what they came up with is the idea was that everyone plays each other once, home or away, and you rotate next year. And then the final five games of the season are basically such that the bottom teams play each other off, and they get into a circumstance whereby they're in position to play for a wild card position to play against whoever's in fifth and sixth. So it's kind of a bastardized version of Bill Simmons entertaining as hell playoff format, except it's not entertaining as hell because A, it's completely contrived, and B, it's AFL football. But I've not seen a single AFL fan in my mentions, or not even in my mentions, in my timeline. And I follow a lot of AFL people because I like punishment. Also because normal people seem to like AFL. You know, that clearly wasn't in their bio when I followed them. Who are incredibly upset about the idea that 7 and 8, the teams that finished 7th and 8th, won't have a fair shake of making the finals.
This comes back to that. Like the thing that the NBA struggles with is how do you prevent tanking?
Well, particularly, and the answer is get rid of the draft.
Yeah.
That's the only end. If you want to stop tanking, stop incentivizing failure.
Yeah. And, you know, and that creates other problems. Like no sporting system is perfect. So, but, you know, AFL, like a lot of other sports, is very traditional, and you can't mess with anything, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you can't change the length of the game, and, you know, you can't play two games on a weekend, or, you know, like, there's just so many different things that people are not willing to look at. So,
no, you've got to play these two particular people on this particular day. You've got to play these two on an Anzac Day, and these two on fucking Mother's Day, and these two on the third Wednesday in Lent, and, you know, it's like,
at some stage
your sport's going to contract. Mm. It'll stop growing. It'll start contracting, and then you'll have to ask yourself, all that tradition only matters to old people who are dying.
It's a little bit like the Boxing Day test. You know, I've read quite a few of Chappell's earlier books, and the Boxing Day game used to be Victoria versus South Australia. That was the big game.
Yeah, the Boxing Day test is a confection. It's only been around for the last 20, 30 years. And the New Year's Day test in Sydney is even newer.
Yeah.
And seems to be moving further away from New Year's Day every time the ICC put out a new rule about the number of days that have to be off between test matches. Used to start on New Year's Day, now it starts on the 3rd because you've got to have a limited number of games.
That famous story of Warne's first New Year's Day test and being drunk with David Boone and it might have been Jeff Marsh, I think, and going, don't we have to play a test tomorrow? Yeah, you'll be fine, mate. You'll be fine.
Well, but the other thing is that, do you remember that about 20 years ago, that famous Michael Bevan innings against West Indies in the one-day game? That game was on New Year's Day, the 1st of fucking January. There was no fucking New Year's test in Sydney. It was a one-day match. Yeah. So it's, I mean, traditions are only, they only exist for as long as the money is driving them, I think.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And, like, this is one of the things I really admire the NBA for, is they're not scared to try something. Like, they try and stay ahead of the curve. You know, they look at stuff and they're like, okay, we think this might be a problem. let's try a rule change. And if it doesn't work, they'll fuck it off. But they at least try things, and they try things in their D League or their G League. I can't just get used to calling it the G League.
Well, it's not the G League yet, so you can still call it the D League.
But, you know, at least they... Gatorade.
Oh, Christ.
It's the Gatorade League.
I thought it was going to be good. The good league.
The good league.
Not great. They're not fantastic. They're not fucking all-stars. They're good.
And if you don't make it in the finals, you're in the OK league.
As long as they're not all Gs, you know. You're sub G. It's a league full of Gs. Is Warren G in the G league?
Oh, hey, I meant to ask. The Champions League final, have we had the first leg?
No, there's no legs in a Champions League final. It's a winner-takes-all game.
Semi-finals, sorry.
Yeah, we've already got the final. We talked about this last week.
Which Milan made the final?
Juventus, who are from Turin.
Juventus is from Turin.
No, the Milan side suck, which is awful.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. You said you were going for Juventus.
So. But actually, speaking of the Milan sides, Inter Milan sacked their coach, and they're making a performative advance on Antonio Conte, the manager of Chelsea, who's side champions, and more importantly, he's turned a side that not only played badly under Mourinho into champions, but he's also made them likable, which for a Chelsea side is fucking weird. I think the biggest changes he made was Mourinho's not there, but also John Terry, who was basically the Premier League's Wayne Carey. Right down
attraction,
to the
attraction for by subtraction. You reckon?
Well, exactly. So he's right down to the fucking casual racism and the shagging teammates' wives. He's the Premier League's Wayne Carey.
So he'll be back on TV in a couple of years.
Oh hell yes, I'm sure he'll be on Sky Sport giving it explaining why he thinks English players are better than foreigners. Although Terry did actually get a game. He'd been bad. So what happened at the start of the year was Conte's great success with Juventus in Italy had happened with him playing three at the back and then some wing-backs in midfield to run up and down the flanks. But the established system at Chelsea when he got there was four at the back. And he ran with this for a while. But then they got a couple of horrendous losses. And then Conte said, right, we'll do it my way now, rather than the system the players were used to. With three at the back, banished John Terry to the bench because he was the fourth defender who wasn't so flash. He was looking for an excuse to get rid of him. And basically, John Terry hasn't played regularly since fucking September, October last year. Although John Terry did get trotted out for this almost like in a ceremonial way. They'd already won the title. They were playing Watford at home and it was all very, very celebratory. And there was
they gave him two minutes at the end?
No, he started. It was his first start of the year. Someone banged in a corner. He rose up. Nodding it in, goal, tremendous, wheels away. 90 seconds later, up the other end, he does a ridiculous shitty header. The Watford pounce on it, knocking a goal. So his moment of fucking celebration has lasted 90 seconds. And it couldn't happen to a nicer dude. And by nicer, I mean a complete cunt. So fuck that guy. So he's making Chelsea likable is actually a remarkable achievement. But Inter Milan are trying to sort of woo Conte back to Italy because Conte's family is still in Italy, even though he's in London. So they're going to try and get them. And I don't want Inter to get Conte because then Inter won't be worse than my side, AC Milan. And that's really important to me. In fact, one of my tweets, Frank's Ting, AC Milan tweeted, you know, congratulations to Chelsea and Conte. And his response was, well, you know, when he's at Inter, you'll be, you know, it'll be even funnier. And I said, you just worry about finishing fifth in the fucking Premier League, bro. You enjoy that Europa League spot that you're going to get. But I think Liverpool are probably going to finish in the Champions League spots. They're fourth and Arsenal are fifth. But Arsenal need Liverpool to lose their last game, basically, to overtake them. And Liverpool's last game is at Middlesbrough, who gave up about 6 months ago. So yeah, I think that's probably
going to be okay.
I think they're probably going to get fourth, and then Arsenal get fifth, then Arsenal play in the FA Cup final, and then immediately after that, there's a board meeting to decide whether Arsene Wenger gets his job.
It'd be really funny if he does get the arse and goes and takes like a low league side up to perennially fourth and fifth.
Oh look, we'd have
him, just does it again.
We'd have him at West Ham tomorrow. He's so, the thing about Arsenal fans is they are so fucking entitled. They've gotten so used to finishing fourth or better every year. And I know there's that kind of thing where you're so close and you're not quite close enough, but get the fuck over yourselves, guys.
But they should remember what happened to the Broncos when Bennett left and everyone just went, oh, you know, they'll be fine. And they went through two coaches pretty quickly. And like they didn't sort of become last, but I think they did miss the finals a couple of times. Nowhere near the force that they were, and then everyone went, well, let's get better back, eh?
Yeah, God, exactly
that,
right.
That guy could actually coach.
Well, closer to home for Arsenal, Man United. You know, Alex Ferguson leaves, they got David Moyes in, they sucked, they got Louis van Gaal in, they sucked more. They got Jose Mourinho, just quietly they sucked just about as much as they had under the other two dudes. And it's, you get used to
it. Might be good for Arsenal to fucking give him the boot and then, you know, play a few seasons close to the relegation zone and then see how you feel about it.
Or just even worse than relegation football, just in that mid-table mediocrity where you're never quite good enough to be relevant. You might make the qualifying stages of the Europa League or something. Now they do that. The guy I'm going to be interested to see next year, I think Conte will stay in Chelsea, but I'm interested to see Pep Guardiola with another year because he... Although this was his first year at Man City, the squad he had was definitely not his. And it was really interesting seeing a guy who has been regarded as a fucking genius of management and a guy who has been quite comfortable letting people know that he's a genius of management settle into this kind of smug, intellectual fucking, I'm cleverer than you, don't worry about it. And having a particular style that he played, the tiki-taka that he played with Barcelona and then with Bayern Munich. Having to deal with parts that didn't fit together and trying to and struggling and that sort of stuff. And when Mourinho struggles, he is fucking horrible. He's an obnoxious cockhead. But it's actually been kind of almost engaging to see Guardiola trying to figure out ways to make his side work with parts that don't actually fit together. And that actually warmed to him quite a lot. I never really liked him as Barcelona or Bayern Munich coach, but I'll be really interested to see his City versus Conte's Chelsea next year. I think that's going to be where the Premier League is going to be won, unless something unforeseen happens.
Unless they all got kicked out of the country.
Oh, this is true, I suppose.
All right, Doc. Shall we wind it up and come back and talk some tunes, or you got a couple more
takes? A few more things, because we're under the hour. Can I just say that I'm officially in on Roy Slaven's idea because the Gold Coast Rugby League side is up for sale, is to take it over and rename it the Gold Coast Blowhards and just turn it over to an all-drugs team. So such that if you're done for drugs, you have to go and play for the Gold Coast team. And that way...
Gallon's the inaugural coach.
And just all drugs. You have to be on drugs if you're going to play for this team. And that even cross code, Mitch Nichols could go there from the Western Sydney Wanderers. and let's just get it out the way. Just say, look, this is the control group, and this is the experimental group, and the Gold Coast team, the experimental group. Let's find out what you know. Say no to drugs. Say yes to the Gold Coast.
Make some halftime speeches interesting.
I heard that backdoor Benny Elias, the great man of Balmain and latterly. Somehow, a man who made a lot of money and became a successful businessman. Harking back to your point about Cricket Australia wanting to get into getting very deeply into the media business, trying to control media narrative. There was made a suggestion in the press that the NRL should scrap together $100 million, which you could probably find, and buy Channel 10.
Just turn it in the NRL.
Just turn it to the NRL channel and then watch everybody not watch it. And now that there's no license fee for free-to-air channels, you know, broadcast whatever you want. And if ever there was a head that said rugby league, I would say Toadie from Neighbours. There's a head that says, I need to be in a scrum with fucking tape around the top.
All of a sudden, Cameron Smith's guesting on Neighbours.
They've had worse.
Yep. Well, they probably have worse actors.
They had Russell Crowe. Maybe he can bring... They can bring the rest of South Sydney on there. I should say some shouts, and the shout I want to say is to a man called Nicky Hayden. Nicky Hayden was the 2006 MotoGP World Champion. That made him the first dude to beat Valentino Rossi to a title since the year 2000. Nicky Hayden was out riding his bike after the most... He now rides for the Honda World Superbike team. He was out riding his bicycle with some colleagues in Italy and got hit by a car and is currently deeply fucked. He's in hospital with severe brain injuries or severe head injuries. They haven't been able to operate on him because he's in too bad a nick. And it's just fucking brutal, rather. And so shouts to that guy. I'm not enjoying the number of sportsmen who are getting taken out in bicycle training accidents right now. It was Michele Scarponi was only a month or so ago, the former Giro winner.
Well, no, wasn't it the Sky rider got his...
Like, yeah, and basically threw him literally last week. He was unharmed.
Dived off his bike and had his bike crushed by a guy that then took off.
Bike was a pretzel. No, he actually got road raged up onto the pavement. So, I mean, they always talk about the cycling culture in Europe and how it's so much better than Australia. Fucking... You want to show you're working on that? It sounds like it's fucking psychotic out there.
Yeah.
I don't imagine we're going to get a positive result out of that with Nicky Hayden, but his 06 title, I don't think he would have told you that he got it on pace, but he got it on guile, and he only won a couple of, like, two races, I think, compared to Rossi, but... Mm-hmm.
But he was consistent all year.
Super consistent and super clever and you know, just did a fantastic job. And, you know, literally Rossi hadn't been beaten. 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5. So it was 2006 before anybody had beaten Rossi. And that was on different sorts of bikes. He'd been on 500cc Grand Prix bikes, and then they'd switch to the 1000cc four strokes. And then he'd switch camps to Yamaha from Honda. It was a remarkable achievement,
I do wonder whether that's going to happen with Crankworx, because they've added a fourth stop this year, and I think they're going to try and add a fifth stop next year. I should check that out. But because it's such a little bit like MotoGP, it's such high risk, high reward. You know, to get those wins, you really got to go for it. But with three races, you know, you crash out of one, you win two, you're going to win the title. But if there's 5 or 6 races and you crash twice, the guy that just comes third for every tournament might take home the world title rather than the guy that gets two firsts.
I guess the only way to fix that is to have a point system that gives you 1 point for a win and no points for anything else.
That's right. All right, anything else?
Speaking of no point, our podcast. Good night to you.